Thanks for speaking to me today, and I just wanted to start off by asking for someone who might not be familiar with the terminology, what do you mean by dispossession in the context of your research in this book? And could you talk about some examples that are outlined in this book?
Yeah, sure. So when we're thinking about capitalism and dispossession, in the book, dispossession is kind of understood in a variety of different ways, but in all the ways, it's talking about how some people are dispossessed or some people are losing out when on the other hand, some people are accumulating or gaining. So in the book, there's a variety of examples of this. So in some of the cases, there would be there's a lot of mining cases. So Canadian mining corporations in Canada and abroad. So there are cases where Canadian mining company in there's a chapter on Guatemala, for example, where Indigenous people are fiercely resisting a Canadian mine because they feel like there's an element of dispossession going on. Like their water is being harmed. Their land is being taken away from them in order for the mining to go ahead. So on the one hand, there's accumulation. So accumulation of profit and wealth by the companies and by Canadian shareholders. And then on the other hand, dispossession. So people losing land, people losing access to clean drinking water, people losing livelihoods from agriculture, that kind of stuff. So there's, again, there's, but there's a few different, so in another case, it might be in the case of, there's a case in Canada in the book written by Veldon Coburn on Grassy Narrows, where waterways, Indigenous waterways were polluted and poisoned, and so this is another form of dispossession where Indigenous people are losing access to waterways that were life-sustaining in many ways. So those are a couple. Yes, that's right. Yeah. And so those are a couple of the examples of how we kind of think how we think about dispossession. So often, like the loss of land or the loss of livelihoods or the loss of waterways, which also for a lot of people in different parts of the world, losing access to land and or mountains or waterways is also about losing culture, losing like the connections to economies and connections to spirituality and culture. That because you're tied to the land in so many different ways, right? So those are, I think, some of the ways in the book that we try to envision this thing called dispossession.
In the introduction that you co-authored, you write, this book makes a rare attempt to critically examine the activities of Canadian corporations domestically and internationally, and more importantly, to draw connections between processes of corporate accumulation in both realms. Rather than treating them as fundamentally different, we suggest that both exist within a global capitalist market that is creating dispossession for many Canadian corporations, with the direct and indirect assistance of the Canadian state, are profiting from these acts of dispossession across jurisdictions. What, in your view, why is it important to make connections between the ways that corporations operate, in Canada and internationally?
Yeah, I think well, there's a couple reasons. One is kind of more academic, in the sense that a lot of the academic literature is almost divided. So there's a whole body of academic literature that looks at Canadian corporations abroad. And then there's another sort of body of literature that looks at Canadian political economy and what's going on within Canada. And these two things are typically sort of existing apart from one another. And so what I've focused most of my work on in the past has been Canadian corporations abroad. And I think after my first book, I started to try to understand the connections between the cases that I've looked at overseas and what's going on closer to home. And for the academic reason is like pulling these two bodies of literature together and having them kind of speak to one another. Now, it's not a total exception. There are a couple people who have done this before, but overall, the general kind of picture is this sort of divided literature. But I mean, outside of academic reasons, I think for typical people living in this country, I think it's really interesting for us to think about the two things as being connected, because I think often, like when you hear about something happening far away in Indonesia or Burkina Faso or Guatemala or whatever, you think, oh well, you know, that's over there, and like that would never happen here, and it's not related to anything in my life, that kind of thing. So what we tried to do was split the book in half and have cases abroad and cases at home, and then try to talk in the introduction and the conclusion about what are some of the threads that bind these things together, and how do we see kind of similar processes unfolding both close by and abroad. And I think that's like one of the, as you said in the introduction, that's kind of one of the key contributions that we're hoping to make in the book, is starting to bind those things together a bit and make it more obvious what the connections between those things might be.
You refer to direct and indirect assistance from the Canadian state in this process. And I think many people probably see Canada as basically a positive force internationally, particularly in comparison to the United States.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that rather commonly held view?
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, there's sort of been a mythology developed over the decades of as you said, the Canadian government and Canada in general as sort of a helpful, peaceful, kind force in the world. And I think one of the things we try to do in the book is point out how both the Canadian government and corporate Canada are working to undermine a lot of things, both at home and abroad, such as Indigenous sovereignty, such as Indigenous access to land and water, and lots of other things. So I think this idea that Canada is this benevolent helper in the world is a very powerful idea, a very powerful mythology that's been developed. But I think, given more careful scrutiny and exposure to case studies and whatnot, a lot of that starts to unravel, and we start to see that the Canadian forces overseas and at home, but especially overseas in the one half of the book, are really all about accumulating as much wealth as possible for Canadian companies and Canadian shareholders and Canadian people. And that comes in many cases at the expense of people's lives, people's dignity, people's access to land, and all these other things, and great, you know, grave violations of human rights and environmental abuses and everything else. And that we are really like any other people and state in the world that's kind of out there accumulating and pilfering in a lot of ways. So I think that's kind of like one of the other things that we try to get at in the book.
Mm-hmm. It seems like Canada is or has been for the past period of time going through sort of a reckoning process about its history, particularly with respect to Indigenous people and the dispossession, particularly about the residential schools and their legacy, which of course is tied to the process of colonizing Canada and extracting resources. You know, we could go back to the buffalo and the fur trade and so on. Do you think that there's a lack of attention to the ways that some of these processes may be ongoing internationally and also within the Canadian territory?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's still very little awareness among the general population about what Canadian corporations are up to overseas. I think hardly anyone follows this or keeps track of it or really cares for that matter. And I mean, and that's like really what I've poured my life's work into in the academic world, trying to build these cases and make a case that this is going on and trying to draw attention and awareness to these things. I think it might be like slightly better now than say 10 years ago. There is, like, for example, this guy Tyler Shipley wrote this really fantastic book a couple of years ago on Canada's place in the world, which I think that book's done really well, so there's stuff like that going on that I think is starting to draw a bit more attention to it. But by and large, these things are very kind of marginal in the imagination of most Canadians, right? And they either don't know or they don't care to know. And when it's brought to their attention, they often deny it because this mythology is so strong in their minds. So I think, like, you know, although there's some headway being made around the international stuff, I think it's still like largely sort of erased from the popular imagination mm-hmm. of Canadians.
And previously, you organized a book launch at Mount Allison for the book Unearthing Justice: How to Protect Your Community from the Mining Industry. And I'll try to kind of summarize the events briefly. Two RCMP officers attended that event, introducing themselves afterwards to you, I think. And that prompted you to file an access to information request to the RCMP, which revealed some information about what they were up to there. Some of it was redacted because the information, it said, pertained to the detection, prevention, or suppression of crime. What was the significance of that particular episode for you?
Yeah, you have it pretty much right. It was the two RCMP officers arrived just after the event, so they didn't see the entire event. They arrived kind of afterwards, and they came up to the author, Joan Kuyak, and identified themselves to her as RCMP officers and had a conversation with her. And I was still in the room talking to a couple other people. But that was, that was really startling for me and, you know, not totally surprising. Like I know that the RCMP monitors a lot of social media and they're especially looking for particular phrases and things going on. And they want to kind of monitor and surveil, dissidents, right? So people who are, you know, kind of posing a threat to business as usual for extraction in particular. But that was, you know, it was significant because, well, first of all, it's never happened at Mount Allison before, since I've been here, and have never heard of that happening before. And it shows the, you know, what many of us already know, but it shows the kind of depths that RCMP and others go, other police forces go to in terms of trying to monitor this kind of work, right? And by this kind of work, I mean, we're talking about a largely academic book, you know, that was being discussed by some students and some profs on a university campus, right? And it seems totally absurd. But the thing that came out of that was that I think one of the things that it's hard to know this for sure, but my hunch is that on a Facebook post, I described the event as using a number of words, but one of the phrases was discussing indigenous resistance to extraction and mining in Canada. And that's the kind of phrase and slogan that they're really monitoring and that they're really, really watching for and that they feel threatened by. And this is where the Canadian state, again, will do whatever it can to make sure that Canadian corporations have unfettered access to the minerals and other things that they want to extract in Canada. So when they see phrases like that and find out that people are talking about this, they want to make sure that they know who these people are, what exactly they're talking about, and what kind of connections these people have with one another. But yeah, to me, I mean, it showed the kind of like depravity, really, of policing in this country, when it comes to the lengths that they will go to surveil and monitor and spy on and try to intimidate anyone who is even discussing a sort of counter narrative to the dominant narrative around extraction and settler colonialism and accumulation of wealth in this country. Like even people just sitting around casually talking about a book seems threatening to them. Right? So that to me, you know, it spoke volumes about what kinds of interests they have at heart, and how the Canadian state uses police forces to ensure that, again, corporate Canada has unfettered access to these resources, and that any kind of resistance or dissent is monitored real carefully and intimidated, right? Like, they could have just bought a copy of the book and read it, but they decided not, you know, but they didn't. They decided that they want to show up to the event and present themselves as RCMP, so that we would know that they're there and that they're watching, right? So to me, it's not just about kind of reading, like, them checking out the ideas in the book. It's also about intimidating people who dare to challenge these narratives of accumulation. That's kind of where I saw it.
I guess I should add that these were plainclothes officers, weren't they?
That's right,
And,
yes.
uh-huh. And I think if I recall correctly, they tried to obtain a copy of the book, but I think they'd already been packed up at that point. Is that right? Do you remember that detail?
Yeah, well, they asked where they could get a copy of the book, and I said that the bookseller had already left. But that they could easily go down to Tidewater Books and buy a copy.
Which is also, by the way, where people can get a copy of your new book, Capitalism
Yes, that's right.
Dispossession, at Tidewater.
That's right.
And again, the launch is happening Wednesday, September 7th, 7 p.m. and on the roof of the Student Center at Mount Allison.